leading scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief, and you just heard from President Dwight D. Eisenhower on his famous farewell speech, and then also from President George H.W. Bush, who famously said in 1992 that the United States was going to lead the way with Agenda 21. And indeed they have. Unfortunately, most people in communities all around our country, if they would dare even bring up the phrase Agenda 21, people would look at them like they're nuts. Like, are you a conspiracy theorist or what? Well, it's no conspiracy, folks. It's everywhere in our country right now. There's a new word for chasing cars out of cities. It's called superblock. Superblock is a new urban development term that means basically you block off part of the city, usually a downtown area, and you ban cars from driving in that area and let people walk and walk their dogs and ride their bicycles and roller skate or whatever they want to do, but they can't take a car. I wrote at the top of this article, the global push to ban cars from city centers continues as progressive urban planners from around the world flock to the latest fad. The new design meme is called a super block and is gaining in popularity. And indeed it is. Mostly, this was a European phenomenon for some time, but now it's come to the United States. We've had several stories recently talking about, for instance, San Francisco that banned a large part of Market Street to automobiles. I predict that that will cause great chaos and angst amongst people who are trying to navigate through downtown San Francisco. It was already difficult enough as it was, but now, not being able to use that main arterial street, it's going to be even more difficult. Lots of zigzagging, lots of right turns, left turns. San Francisco already made it very confusing with so many one-way streets. Unless you drive there and know the city like the back of your hand, you will inevitably get trapped in an endless circuit of making left turns, right turns, trying to figure out how to get going in a certain direction. I've been there, done that, so I know. The story starts out on weekends. A city in Spain feels like a never-ending block party. Cyclists share the magnolia-shaded street with off-leash dogs and teetering toddlers. There are bustling cafe tables and families on benches eating ice cream. That's life in a city of 200,000, where nearly half the streets have been converted into car-free zones over the past decade. I just want to say, in passing, that things like this always sound like utopia. Off-leash dogs, teetering toddlers, cafe tables on the street, people eating ice cream. I mean, is this real life or what? Or is life just about playing and frolicking in the grass? Well, they sure make it sound good. The story continues. The city is my test case, says Salvador Rueda, a Spanish urban planner known for overseeing large-scale pedestrian conversions in Barcelona and Buenos Aires, among other places. Vitoria Gasteiz, he says, is my laboratory, a city whose history is a center of auto manufacturing. It's home to factories for Mercedes and Michelin, makes it an unlikely showcase. If we can do something here, others can see it and replicate our results. Rueda 66 is known as the world's leading proponent of superblocks, in which groups of commercial or residential streets are barred to through traffic, crisscrossed by pedestrian walkways and carpeted with grassy malls. Thanks to his work, Vitoria Gasteiz has 63 of them, with plans for 48 more. It's a revolution, Ryuta says, as we ride bikes down Calle de Postas. A cheap revolution where you don't have to demolish a single building, he says. The idea of large vehicle-free blocks, which has been around since the 1920s, has been applied with often underwhelming results to the design of corporate campuses and public housing. But nobody has used super blocks as extensively or more successfully as Ryuta. In parts of downtown Vitoria-Gasteiz, he and his team have reduced the number of cars on the road by 27%, leading to a 42% reduction in the city's carbon dioxide emissions. A full 50% of residents walk as their primary mode of transportation, and 15% bike. In September, the United Nations named Vitoria-Gasteiz the Global Green City of the Year, citing its commitment, quote, not just to sustainability, but to citizen equality, security, happiness, and health. Cities in the U.S. and Latin America are considering adopting its model. And I have to say, here it comes. Indeed, it's coming to America like a steamroller. The article continues, to make a superblock, Reed and his team typically start with 9 square blocks totaling about 40 acres. Then they extend the sidewalks, plant trees, add bike lanes, and install benches. Cars aren't entirely forbidden, and Ryuta's Spanish projects, residents and delivery vehicles must abide by a speed limit of 10 kilometers per hour, which is about 6 miles per hour, the equivalent of a jog, but through traffic is not allowed. Cameras clock car speeds and routes, and rule breakers are fined $223 for each violation. Everyone here follows the rules, Ryuta says, dismounting from his bike and pointing shyly to a closed-circuit camera on a building. But just in case they don't, we keep an eye on them. And indeed, this small city in Spain seems to be the fountainhead for the so-called super block movement, and it seems to have one particular urban planner, Salvador Ryuta, as the principal architect. The United Nations obviously heartily approves and ties it directly to sustainable development. So there you have the connection. This is not just something that spontaneously came up and said, hey, this would be a great idea. Let's just make some nice walk areas around downtown. No, this was about cutting carbon emissions from day one. It was about getting cars off the streets. It was about forcing people onto their feet, onto bicycles, onto scooters, onto public transit. Cars are not allowed. The next story is not exactly a repeat of any story we've ever done before at Technocracy News on robots, even human-like robots. And there have been many attempts to build human-looking robots, but they've all failed for one reason or another. Well, that's coming to an end. Humanoid androids have finally entered the workplace. This story will absolutely amaze you, and you must listen to the video that's included in this story. I wrote at the top, the technocrat and transhuman holy grail is not to augment the human experience, but to replace it altogether with AI hosting the souls of would-be immortals. The android race now has a myriad of startups working feverishly to be first. The gist of this story is that a startup in Russia has begun to make robots that look so realistic they can hardly be differentiated between real humans. The article states, November 2019 is a landmark month in the history of the future. That's when humanoid robots that are indistinguishable from people start running amok in Los Angeles. Well, at least they do it in the seminal sci-fi film Blade Runner. 37 years after its release, we don't have murderous androids running around, but we do have androids like Hanson Robotics' Sophia, and they could soon start working in jobs traditionally performed by people. And I have to add in passing again that Sophia, the robot, didn't convince much of anybody that she was human. The article continues, Russian startup Promobot recently unveiled what it calls the world's first autonomous android. Android means like a robot person. It closely resembles a real person that can serve in a business capacity. RoboC, that's Robo-C, the letter C, can be made to look like anyone, So it's like an Android clone. It comes with an artificial intelligence system that has more than 100,000 speech modules, according to the company. It can operate at home, acting as a companion robot and reading out the news or managing smart appliances. Basically, an anthropomorphic smart speaker. It can also perform workplace tasks such as answering customer questions in places like offices, airports, banks, and museums while accepting payments and performing other functions. We analyzed the needs of our customers, and there was a demand, says Promobot co-founder and development director. But, of course, we started the development of an anthropomorphic robot a long time ago. Since in robots there is a concept of the uncanny valley, and the most positive perception of the robot arises when it looks like a person. Now we have more than 10 orders from companies and private clients from around the world. Postulated by Japanese roboticist Masahiro Mori in 1970, the uncanny valley is a hypothesis related to the design of robots. It holds that the more human-like a robot appears, the more people will notice its flaws. This can create a feeling akin to looking at zombies and can creep people out. A properly designed android that's as faithful as possible to the human original, however, can overcome this valley. A dip when the effect is imagined as a graph and the zombie factor. While it can't walk around, RoboC has 18 moving parts in its face, giving it 36 degrees of freedom. The company says it has over 600 microfacial expressions, the most on the market. It also has 3 degrees of freedom in its neck and torso, offering limited movement. Still, Promobot says it can be useful in homes and workplaces. The price of the robot is $20,000 to $50,000, depending on options and customized appearance. The company says it's building 4 RoboCs, one for a government service center, where the machine will scan passports and perform other functions, one that will look like Einstein and be part of a robot exhibition, and 2 for a family in the Middle East that wants to have android versions of his father and his wife to greet guests. The key moment in development of RoboC is the digitalization of personality and the creation of an individual appearance, says the director. As a result, digital immortality, which we can offer our customers. And again, I will say that the technocrat and transhuman holy grail is not just to make a robot for the sake of making a robot. It's not just for the sake of making a few bucks. It's for the sake of immortality. That is developing an Android-type device that can provide mobility and hosting services for people who upload their brains into the AI contained in the robot. This is how they hope to achieve immortality and escape death. And now that the technology has been started by Promobot, a number of other startup companies are coming along trying to do the same thing and advance the science to where androids will be developed that look like that famous character on Star Trek known as Data, indistinguishable from humans, but nevertheless with an uncanny ability to appear omniscient and immortal. I think the next story would make George Orwell blush. Orwell was right when he talked about the concept of doublethink. In this story, the title, UN Claim, China's concentration camps bring, quote, stronger sense of happiness. That is exactly what it says. The concentration camps in China, the re-education camps, as they call them, are actually claimed now or asserted to bring a stronger sense of happiness to the people in China. You can't make this up. I wrote at the top of this article, in a classic case of Orwell's doublethink, China's concentration camps are being relabeled as a counterterrorism and de-radicalization centers that make people happy and secure. This is technocrat madness, and it defies any rational explanation. The article states, a group of 54 United Nations members issued a statement Tuesday defending China for building over 1,000 concentration camps to imprison, torture, indoctrinate, rape, and kill Muslims, crediting the camps with building a, quote, stronger sense of happiness in the country. Belarus, often considered the last dictatorship standing in Europe, delivered a statement on behalf of the China-allied nations at the General Assembly in response to a group statement condemning China's human rights atrocities. Okay, so get the picture here. On one hand, a group of nations called China out for its human rights atrocities, and then comes Belarus with 54 other United Nations members to refute that claim and to say, no, it's really a good thing. China has built hundreds of concentration camps in western Xinjiang province, home to the nation's Muslim ethnic minority, since late 2017, which it has used to imprison up to 3 million Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and Kyrgyz Muslims. Survivors of the camps, mostly Kazakhs and Uyghurs, married to foreign nations who appealed abroad for their freedom, say they were subject to forced sterilization and beatings, forced to memorize Communist Party propaganda songs, affirm their loyalty for dictator Xi Jinping, and serve as sex slaves for guards at the camps. Some also accuse China of using prisoners for slave labor to manufacture products sold in, among other places, the United States. The Chinese government published the favorable statement in full. I will read that after we're done with the article. Belarus, claiming to speak on behalf of other draconian states like Russia, Bolivia, Pakistan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, condemned politicizing human rights issues by naming and shaming human rights violators. Belarus stated, quote, "Faced with the grave challenge of terrorism and extremism, China has undertaken a series of counterterrorism and de-radicalization measures in Xinjiang, including setting up vocational education and training centers. The last three consecutive years have seen not a single terrorist attack in Xinjiang, and people there enjoy a stronger sense of happiness, fulfillment, and security. Despite the Chinese regime severely limiting the entry of foreigners or other Chinese people from elsewhere in the country into Xinjiang, the note said that countries appreciate China's commitment to openness and transparency, referencing a staged media access tour China organized for the state media of various friendly countries. The statement concluded by condemning those standing up for human rights and demanding they refrain from employing unfounded charges against China based on unconfirmed information before they visit Xinjiang," which, of course, they cannot do freely, but perhaps they're thinking you can somehow. Let me now read you the full statement of the letter that was written to the United Nations by the group of 54 countries led by Belarus. "Dear Mr. President," of course, the "Dear Mr. President" refers to the President of the United Nations. "Dear Mr. President, I have the honor to make the following joint statement on behalf of 54 countries, including Pakistan, the Russian Federation, Egypt, Bolivia, Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Serbia. We reiterate that the work of human rights in the United Nations should be conducted in an objective, transparent, non-selective, constructive, non-confrontational, and non-politicized manner. We express our firm opposition to relevant countries' practice of politicizing human rights issues by naming and shaming and publicly exerting pressures on other countries. We commend China's remarkable achievements in the field of human rights by adhering to the people-centered development philosophy and protecting and promoting human rights through development. We also appreciate China's contributions to the international human rights cause. We take note that terrorism, separatism, and religious extremism has caused enormous damage to the people of all ethnic groups in Xinjiang, which has seriously infringed upon human rights, including the right to life, health, and development. Faced with the grave challenge of terrorism and extremism, China has undertaken a serious counterterrorism and de-radicalization measures in Xinjiang, including setting up vocational education and training centers, not concentration camps, of course, but vocational education and training centers. Now safety and security has returned to Xinjiang, and fundamental human rights of people of all ethnic groups there are safeguarded. The past three consecutive years has not seen a single terrorist attack in Xinjiang, and people there enjoy a stronger sense of happiness, fulfillment, and security. We note with appreciation that human rights are respected and protected in China in the process of counterterrorism and de-radicalization. We appreciate China's commitment to openness and transparency. China has invited a number of diplomats, international organization officials, and journalists to Xinjiang to witness the progress of the human rights cause and the outcomes of counterterrorism and de-radicalization there. What they saw and heard in Xinjiang completely contradicted what was reported in the media. We call on relevant countries to refrain from employing unfounded charges against China based on unconfirmed information before they visit Xinjiang. We urge OHCHR, treaty bodies, and relevant special procedures mandate holders to conduct their work in an objective and impartial manner according to the mandate with true and genuinely credible information and value the communication with member states. Thank you, Mr. President. And then, of course, the signatories appear below. This is not a surprising development in light of the highly fractured nature of the United Nations in the first place. And placing this story in the pages of Technocracy News and Trends does not mean to support the Muslim world in any way, shape, or form. However, saying that China's concentration camps are really just vocational education centers is ludicrous. Many pictures have emerged from China showing what life is like inside these concentration camps with their guard towers, their high chain link fences with razor wire and electric wire on top of that. There's no escape from these camps. They're hardly free. And once you go in, you don't get out, unless they let you out, of course. If you try to escape, you'll simply be shot from a guard tower. So in any case, as I said earlier, George Orwell would have blushed with people using doublethink now in China, saying that concentration camps really bring a stronger sense of happiness. It kind of reminds me of the concept at the end of 1984, where he said that slaves of the state will come to love Big Brother voluntarily, and therefore they will do anything that Big Brother tells them to do. That's exactly what's happening in China. It's social engineering on the ultimate scale that humanity has ever seen in the history of the world. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. See you next time.